Hi, I'm Ty.
And I'm Laura.
And we're Cancer Moms.
We will be discussing the ins and outs of what to expect on the wild ride we call childhood cancer.
Join us twice a month as we share stories of hope, inspiration, hear testimonies from families and healthcare professionals, and discuss the amazing people and organizations who help cancer families every day.
We are the ladies of Golden Voices.
In episode 4 of the Golden Voices podcast, join the Golden Ladies as they invite their first guests to the show. Join us in welcoming Mark and Kelly Linder. On today's episode, listeners will hear from Mark and Kelly as they share their son Kevin's story. We will sit down and chat about how Mark has dedicated his life to riding a bike to help kids who are fighting cancer, and how one organization called DC Strong is making a difference in the lives of children who are fighting childhood cancer.
Well, first of all, let's welcome Mark and Kelly to the show.
Hey guys, all the way from Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. We're glad that you guys are here. You're our first official guests on the Golden Voices podcast.
Wow. Number one.
Number one, right?
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
There's no pressure whatsoever. Maybe if you set the bar too high, though, that might be problematic for our future guests. But
right. You'll have to retire after this one.
But yep. I think you'll A-okay. Ty, why don't you talk a little bit about how you guys, I mean, we're in Oregon, they're in Michigan, how we're even having this conversation right now, and then we'll get into kind of their background.
So I was lucky enough to meet Mark through our friend Kira, and she had found out about their organization called DC Strong. And so what had happened is I think Kira ended up telling Mark about us, and somehow we were connected.
Here we are now.
And here we are now. So I remember that we first met Mark was June 11th, I think it was 2019. And Mark, is that, I think that's when you came out.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I'm not 100% on the date, but I trust you on that. But yeah, absolutely. That was the trip for sure.
Yeah, it was really great. We actually ended up meeting in Woodburn, Oregon. And so he had traveled around, I think, previously in the day and had met with a few other kiddos. I think one was up at the hospital, right, Mark?
Yes.
And then so we went ahead and met with him, and it was just such a wonderful visit. It actually had felt like we had known Mark for a really long time. Like, I felt like the meeting was really great and the conversation was great, and it was just really fun to have somebody come out all the way from Michigan to Oregon to celebrate Lucy and her journey with cancer.
That's remarkable to me, actually, to think. And I'm like, how cool of a job that you get to go travel different places to meet families. Wow. So why don't you guys tell us little bit about yourselves, and certainly, you know, Kevin's story, and then that should lead us into how did you guys start this journey that led you to ultimately meeting Ty?
So we have three kids. Kevin is our youngest, two older girls. So Kevin was, you know, typical 100% boy. Just you could hear him long before you could see him, right? Constantly making noise, constantly running in the house, constantly playing with cars and trucks and airplanes and anything that made noise. He would make his own noise. He would mimic noises, watch Star Wars. He could do all the character voices, that kind of thing. And so he was just a typical 100% stereotypical boy and was running around like a crazy man. And this was, it was Christmas right before he turned 3. And we're actually helping Kelly's mom put wood floors in her new house. She had just moved up here to Michigan to be closer to us. And we were putting in wood floors for her. And Kevin just spent kind of one afternoon, from what I remember, just kind of sitting on the couch, not really doing a whole lot, not really moving a whole lot, which was highly unusual, like I said. And I think we asked him about it, and I think he said his legs hurt. And, you know, it was winter in Michigan, so there's snow on the ground. We thought, well, maybe he took a tumble, slipped on the ice, that kind of a thing. No big deal. This went on, as I remember it, a couple of days, just kind of sitting on the couch, you know, vegging out, not really moving, not really doing anything, which again, was highly unusual.
We took him to the doctor and the pediatrician, and, you know, they said, well, you know, it could be the flu, it could be growing pains. Let's wait, you know, 3 weeks. And if he's still having trouble, come back. So during those 3 weeks, he would get up, and he was potty training at this time. And, you know, stubborn little boy who wanted to be just like his older siblings was determined to potty train, even though he was in a lot of pain. So he would still get up and, you know, try to go to the bathroom and try to be a big boy. And, but the pain would still, was still there. So we went back to the doctor, they ran some tests, and they sent us to a juvenile rheumatoid arthritis specialist. that in itself was pretty scary. You know, she said, you know, he has some symptoms, but just to be sure, let's run some more tests. So she ran her tests, and that's when she told us that we needed to go see an oncologist.
Were they doing lab work at this point or imaging?
Yeah, both. And that process from the day he had his first pain to when he got diagnosed was about 6 weeks.
Yeah. And so it was one of those things, you know, obviously then they say, oh, by the way, you need to go to the oncologist. And initially at the oncologist, they thought, oh, well, surprise, he actually doesn't have arthritis. He's got leukemia. And so we thought, well, crap, that really sucks. Can we go back to arthritis? We'd rather have that, please. And they said that was obviously not an option. And then ran some more tests. The oncologist, from what I remember, again, ran their own tests, obviously, in lab work. And
showed up at the oncologist, on a pediatric oncologist, on a Friday afternoon. They do their tests. And I think one of them was a biopsy. And before we even left, she said she thought that it might be neuroblastoma. And we had never heard of neuroblastoma. So we didn't know what that was. We didn't know that if it was any better or worse than leukemia.
So you were originally, so we went from juvenile kind of rheumatoid arthritis to this looks like leukemia to maybe this looks like neuroblastoma.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy, that's a roller coaster.
Yeah. And I remember he got his first blood transfusion that first Friday too. And that was surreal, watching this bag of blood go into my little boy. You know, it was so surreal. And then we go home and they say, you know, if anything funny happens, give us a call. So Saturday, you know, I'm trying to get him to eat and he's having a hard time wanting to eat, which is also rare. And then I noticed that his like fingers and toes were kind of turning purple. So I called them back and, you know, they said, okay, you know, why don't you go to the ER? They'll be waiting for you. So that's like a 20-30 minute drive for us. So in the meantime, I have to wait for my mom, you know, to come over so she can watch the two other kids. And I show up at the ER and
did you have a diagnosis at this point? Or are you still figuring this out?
Yeah, not official. At that ER visit, they did the ultrasound and found the tumor in his abdomen. And so I think it was by that time Sunday morning, and we had gotten the diagnosis and we were admitted to the hospital.
And how long did you guys initially stay in the hospital, and what did your guys' treatment plan look like?
So the first initial stay was 10 days. They inserted the Broviac tubes and they did his first chemo, and he actually started feeling better right away. I think it was like in the third or fourth day of the hospital, he smiled for the first time in a long time, which was very, very sweet and heartwarming. You know, and family, of course, was in an uproar and we were in shock and I'm not sure how we were processing everything, but, you know, worrying about our two other kids and how life was going to go on. And
yeah, I just wanted to ask, what are their two kids' names and then their ages at the time? And I guess now?
At the time, our oldest, Shannon, was 6 and our middle one, Addison, was 4.
Oh boy, those are tough ages. And you're about a half an hour, you said, away from the children's hospital?
Yes. I know that one of the hardest things was communicating with family and friends, and it was too overwhelming to accept phone calls. And you know, one of the nurses told me that there's this website called Caring Bridge that a lot of the families used, and I was kind of resistant at first. I was like, oh, just, you know, do email and Facebook. And she's like, okay, you know. And then I think after a week, I was like, okay, this is really hard. So I did end up using Caring Bridge, and it was really nice to be able to just post it once and people could just leave messages on there so I could read it on my own time and not have to deal with phone calls, which was really hard.
And I was wondering, so you guys finally got that diagnosis of the neuroblastoma. So your first hospital stay was the 10 days initially, right? And how long did Kevin go through treatment after that initial diagnosis? So how long was that treatment plan?
Or what was your plan?
Right. So he was diagnosed with stage 4 neuroblastoma. So it was, not only did he have the tumor on his right adrenal
kidney. Great kidney area.
His bone marrow had metastasized. So it was 90% tumor in his bone marrow.
want to just pause there. I mean, I want to get back to the story, but I think that the communication piece, and in our previous episodes, we've started touching on that, but we're planning on kind of devoting a little bit more time in the future about that communication piece. And certainly when we talk about family support or resources and what families can do. And I think that it's so hard. Ty and I've talked a lot about this, managing friends and families and getting information out there, because you kind of, I don't know if your situation was like this, but you kind of just want to, you know, you become really insular and you just kind of want to kind of wrap yourself around the situation, and you're getting so much information coming in that disseminating that and kind of getting that out is just exhausting. And you get, you know, wonderful texts and letters and emails and phone calls. But, you know, I know, especially in those early stages for me and my husband, it was so overwhelming. And so having those places, we used Post Hope, but Caring Bridge is so important because you want to communicate, but then you just want to be so insulated. I don't know if that's how you guys felt, but.
Exactly. Yeah. People were like, oh, you can talk to this person. They went through something similar. And I would be like, I'm sorry, I can't deal with other people's stories right now. I have to live through this. I cannot absorb anybody else's stories.
That's so beautifully put. So you guys finally get the news that this is stage 4 metastatic neuroblastoma.
Yeah. And I know that initially, since he did respond to chemo right away, their prognosis was good. You know, they're like, okay, you know, he's responding. Some kids don't respond at all. And, you know, we know that they don't, you know, have much of a chance. So that lifted our spirits. And we're like, all right, you know, let's fight. We're ready. And he did chemo for 6 months. And we went over to University of Michigan, which is about 2 hours away, to get ready for the bone marrow transplant. And so they took some of his stem cells, stem cell aspiration, and that went well. And then we did 3 more months of chemo and some radiation. And then we went back to U of M for the bone marrow transplant, which it was hard and horrific to go through, but he was amazing and came out of it so quickly. We went home earlier than most kids did. He did great.
Can you maybe talk a little bit about, and we're going to talk about transplants kind of again, but so his was, because sometimes people think, you know, bone marrow transplants and they think, you know, get a bone marrow, you know, donor. There's, you know, really important organization out there, Be the Match. But usually with neuroblastoma, it's not that type of transplant.
Right. So basically they wiped out all of his bone marrow in his body and then reintroduced his own stem cells into his body, and they became his new bone marrow.
They took his stem cells out, froze them, gave him this ultra high dose, basically nuked him essentially, and then gave him his own stem cells back and said, okay, now hopefully this will grow.
Grow healthy. Right. The neuroblastoma. But unfortunately, that didn't work. So we also did an antibody therapy, and that was funded by CureSearch, which is another children's cancer research. So we fundraised for them also. But the antibody therapy, I remember, gave him about 10 months of being healthy, which was the longest time he went in the almost 4 years of his battle. Was that 10 months was the longest he went being, you know, no evidence of disease.
Wow. So he was 10 months with no evidence of disease. And he was running around, Star Wars voices.
Oh, yeah. Playing t-ball and soccer, going to preschool and kindergarten. When he was in kindergarten, we started going up to DeVos, which is in Grand Rapids, which is about an hour away. They had Dr. Scholler had. She's since left. But she was doing her own research that was outside of that group. And so that meant she was able to do her own research. So both the University of Michigan and Dr. Scholler had biopsies from him. And, you know, I was fighting to get them to collaborate because the University of Michigan had an early biopsy and Dr. Scholler had a later biopsy, which is when his cancer changed and took off and started growing faster. So that was when we kind of knew we were towards the end. It was in his lungs now, and in, he had tumors growing in his neck and on his head. So we were hoping that, you know, like, get together, share this information. You know, we're not done fighting. Evan was certainly not done fighting. He was never going to give up.
And now he's older and he kind of understands what's going on.
At this point, was he 5 at this point? Because you said he was in kindergarten. Or was he 6?
He was... Yeah, his birthday is in April, so he was 6 at this point. And and finishing kindergarten. And then by the time he started first grade, we knew that, you know, he only had months to live. But, you know, his school and his teachers were telling me, you know, it's okay to send him to school. You know, his buddies that he bonded with and the whole community was supporting us emotionally and, you know, financially helping us have fundraisers and stuff. So the school and or other parents of his buddies were saying, you know, send him to school, you know, they need to go through this too. So that was really hard.
Really hard.
So how long did Kevin end up continuing school at that point?
Only 3 weeks before he became too weak to go to school anymore. Man, he ended up passing October 1st of his sixth year of life. Yeah.
What year was that?
2013.
Oh my goodness. What a neat kid he sounds like. It sounds right up my alley. We're at Star Wars.
Yeah, Andrew was the only morning person in our household. He would wake up singing and he'd run into our bed and like leap up and like, good morning, and start snuggling. And
oh, what a ray of sunshine.
Yes. And with him gone, we're just all grumpy and we take an hour just to wake up and...
Oh, I can't even imagine. I, you know, Ty and I are, you know, super grateful at this point. You know, our kids are Dylan, Ned, you know, and no evidence of disease and doing well at this point. You know, Lucy's been out of treatment for 6 months. My son, Mac, finished treatment October of 2018. You know, so we're still, you know, taking advantage of every day, as you guys know. So sometimes, you know, Ty and I have talked a lot about this, you know, sometimes when families go through this experience, there's a number of different ways to react, certainly. You know, we know some people who it's like you pack up and you move across country for a fresh start. You know, some don't ever want to engage in the cancer world again. And then some people take that energy and channel it into something new. So how are you honoring Kevin's legacy?
So we're still fundraised for CureSearch because they raise money solely for pediatric cancer research. And we still, you know, Mark mainly does the rides for Make-A-Wish. I try. And then, you know, being part of DC Strong, I think has had the biggest impact on us because they gave Kevin his care package the Saturday before he died. He died on a Tuesday. And so his care package and his, you know, fun day was that Saturday before because we thought he still had, you know, a few weeks, maybe a month to go.
So how did you guys get connected with DC Strong?
I had heard about them giving another one of our area cancer families a care package, and we saw their cancer response vehicle, which is a big Jeep all tricked out, when we were going out to eat. And I was like, hey, Mark, those are the guys that helped other kids. So he went over and introduced himself to Nate, the then president, and they started talking from that point on.
Yeah, it was just kind of random chance. We were out to eat, like Kelly said, and there were two restaurants in the strip mall right next to each other, kind of two relatively quick serve restaurants, right? And Kelly and I think one of the girls wanted one particular one, and I felt like the other one with one of the other kids. And so we kind of split forces, and the DC guys were in the one that I went into. And so went up and just kind of introduced myself and said, hey, what's the story? You know, I had at that point not heard of DC Strong. Kelly had briefly. And so I just said, tell me about this organization. They started telling me about it, and my jaw was on the ground, and I'm like, well, would you like to meet a kid who has cancer? He's literally next door. And so they said, absolutely. And so they came over and talked, and then we tried to set something up, and, you know, kind of just, you know, life in general, right? Logistically, we couldn't make it happen when we originally were talking about it. And then it just took a little bit longer, but it just so happened that, yeah, it ended up being the weekend before he passed. And, you know, one of the great memories that I have from that day is that, so we live in a very small town in Michigan. We have about, I don't know, 3,500, 5,000 people somewhere like that in our community. And so they brought a bunch of supercars, Ferraris and Corvettes and Mustangs and stuff down to our high school. And we got to go ride in all the cars. And then they gave them a care package as well. And then after that, we all drove over to Lake Michigan, which is, you know, where we were going, probably 35, 40 minutes away. And on the ride over, our girls actually went into the Jeep like Kelly said, this tricked out Jeep. And so rode with these kids. They're all, you know, high school age or a little bit older at the time. And they had a great time in the Jeep. And then the founder, Dustin, who was an incredible young man, rode in our car and sat next to Kevin. And they talked like they had been friends for 50 years, you know, having met. I think that was the first time that I've even met in person. They were like old souls, you know, talking about different treatments and then Pokemon and just you name it. They were talking about everything. And, you know, I was driving over and I look back and there's this, you know, high school kid talking to my 6-year-old about cancer treatments and then about Pokemon and Star Wars and everything else. And it was just, it was really incredible. And so then we went out and went out with the Coast Guard, actually, and went out on a boat with the Coast Guard and got to drive the Coast Guard boat around. And it was just an incredible day. Absolutely incredible day.
Oh my gosh. And so for our audience, so DC Strong, named after Dustin Collier.
Correct.
Is a nonprofit organization that brings kind of personalized gifts and experiences to children battling cancer.
That's right.
Kind of in that effort to keep their spirits up and kind of their minds focused. And I can't even imagine being a 6-year-old starting out with RC cars, riding in a tricked out Jeep and getting to drive a Coast Guard boat. Right. I mean, this is an experience. This is quite the experience.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. And obviously it's one that is not easily replicated, frankly. And so that was, it was definitely special. It was, Kevin was actually one of the very first kids that organization helped. And so it was started by high school kids. It was run by high school kids. And that's, I think, what made it even more special to me, because I don't know about Kelly, but I can speak for myself that when I was in high school, the last thing on my mind was trying to help anyone, let alone a kid fighting cancer. And so just to see these young guys and girls come together and help kids being kids themselves was just, it was truly, that definitely touched my soul.
And one thing that we really appreciate is, after Kevin passed, we're still part of this DC Strong family. Most of the other organizations kind of only cater to surviving cancer kids. And being a family that lost a child to cancer, we can't relate to a lot of those families anymore. And we also can't relate to a lot of families who've lost children to other reasons. So having this core group of parents that we can still get together with and talk and commiserate with because we've been through it together is really, really helpful, more than any other group I think we've ever participated in.
Kelly, that hit me so hard in kind of that way that I think that, you know, we've talked about, you know, when you become a parent of a kid with cancer, you join a club that you never thought you wanted to be a part of.
Right.
Reluctantly, but then you're really glad, at least our experiences is that we're really glad that we did for that support. And kind of talked a lot about, you know, when you're with your fellow like cancer parents, you know, you don't have to explain yourself, right? You don't need to do a caring bridge post because you speak the same language and you
understand the experiences that you have gone through, even though they might be different. Right. There are still a lot of similarities that bring those families and their children together.
Right.
But then there's that next stage then for, you know, an even more special group of parents who have lost kids to cancer. And I think that that relating piece, you're now in a different group. You're always going to know the cancer experience, but that just hit me so hard, Kelly. And I think that that's going to resonate with a lot of our audience as well, is that it's hard to still be talking about, you know, we're still no evidence of disease. Yeah. We're going up every few months for scans or labs, and that's not where you are.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was, you know, the whole experience of being part of that cancer group and going to the hospital all the time. And so you lose that family, you lose that hospital family. You're no longer going to the hospital and the clinic all the time. You no longer, you know, get to see all the other kids who are still fighting. You lose all that too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for all of you, go to the DC Strong website so you can see pictures of Mark and Kelly on there. And so what is your position now? How did that turn in from here you are watching your kid drive a Coast Guard boat to last year you're in Oregon visiting Lucy?
Right. Basically what happened is Kevin was one of the very first kids, and I think one of the first five maybe families that they had helped. And so
And
the first one they had lost. That's right. But to their credit, and this is again something that Kelly touched on that it's 100% accurate. A lot of the other organizations said, okay, you're now not really part of what we do anymore. And they said, absolutely not. You're even more involved now. We're come here, we're going to hug you more. And so your family is always going to be part of this. And so it really, truly resonated. They came to Kevin's funeral. Dustin, so we called Kevin Super Kevin, and because he was our superhero, right? And so our logo and all of our shirts and stickers and stuff like that was always kind of the Superman, you know, diamond with a K in the middle that Kelly's actually now drawing while we're speaking here. And Dustin actually got that Super K tattooed on his chest.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
It's huge. We're talking like 5 inches tall. Right.
And so that really spoke to us. And so then they invited us to be part of a video that they were putting together and to speak for this video. And it was one of those things where we were obviously honored. And so we came and we talked in this video, and they didn't really use a lot of what we said, which is fine. But we're still part of it. And then we just kept going to fundraisers and, you know, buying shirts and stuff and just supporting them whenever we could. And then eventually they said, hey, we need a treasurer. Would you like to be our treasurer?
Well, this is after Mark would not so subtly say, hey, do you need any help? Can I help in any way?
Yeah. So I kept trying to, like, I guess solicit is probably an accurate description, and just say, hey, look, I really want to be part of, like, they truly, those guys made me feel young, right? Having been a high school kid for many years, it was kind of a two-way relationship where they were making me feel young and they were making me feel loved. And I felt like I could be kind of the dad of the group, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, or just an experienced voice of reason somewhat. Now, you know, they were high school kids. They were making some decisions that, you know, sometimes were not the best. And so anyway, they said, hey, we need a treasurer. So I eventually became their treasurer. And I think I was their treasurer for a year. And then they said, well, we've got another person that's going to be our treasurer, but we'd love for you to stay on as a board member. I said, absolutely. And so then, yeah. So then I started doing some care packages. And 3 or 4 times a year, they try to invite all their families together and do what's called a family day. So we'd do something stupid, like we'd, you know, go to a baseball game, or we'd have a Nerf gun war. We had board game nights. We'd go to movies, that kind of thing. Always free to the families. And obviously, we were still invited to all of those. And then, yeah, it just became a thing where I started doing more and more care packages. And then one of Dustin had 2 main goals for DC Strong. His first was to open an office. And so we did that, I guess, 3 years ago now in downtown Plainwell, which is just north of Kalamazoo, again, Southwest Michigan. Plainwell is where Dustin was from. We opened this office that was probably, I don't even know if it was a 10 by 10. I mean, it was tiny, right? But it was great. You know, we have a little table in there. We would have board meetings. And then they had, you know, an Xbox and the PlayStation and all these video games for kids to come in and just hang out. We had couches and movies and that kind of thing. And the kids and their families could come in. It didn't really get a whole lot of use for that. And then last year, we went across the hall and opened much, much bigger, much more awesome office. Oh, so now it's like basically like a fantasy factory, if you can remember the old MTV show. And I mean, and it's still like on a relatively small scale, but it's pretty, pretty awesome. And it's, again, a place where the kids can come and hang out, and we got beanbags and video games and arts and crafts and Legos, and you can write on the wall, and just, it's a really, really cool space.
For kids all ages, you know. Correct. There's stuff for the little kids, and there's stuff for the older kids. There's even a drum set and some guitars and
right, a keyboard. And so Dustin's second goal for DC Strong was to do kind of a world tour. And so he wanted to go kind of across the country and deliver care packages. And so at the time, there were 6 of us, I believe, in the organization. We rented a van for a week, and 6 smelly dudes climbed in the van. And we drove. I drove primarily because I was old enough to rent the van. And we drove through 6 states, 8 care packages in like 6 days, 5 or 6 days, something like that. And it was just absolutely incredible. So then once we did that world tour kind of experience, then we said, well, we need to bring this, you know, further across the country. And so then we just kind of through social media and reaching out to other families who knew other families, who knew doctors, who knew other families and social workers, we've started getting kids that were been submitted from all over the country. And now we have now been in and done care packages in 25 states.
Oh my gosh.
That's so incredible. I know, I was just reading on the website too recently that, you know, it was 25 states, but you guys have delivered what, like 141 packages total?
Yeah, it's definitely grown. This last, I think, you know, I think the first year, I think they did maybe 5 or 6, you know, and the second year they did, you know, 10-ish or so. And then, yeah, this last year, I think we did 39. And so it's, it's been really neat to see just the change in the evolution and the good and bad, right? That we're helping more, but then there's also more that need help. And so it's been just incredible to see that happen.
How many families are local or in proximity to that office that you have been talking about? Like on average, how many do you guys usually see?
Yeah, so it just kind of depends, you know, and in one of the nice and bad things about this is that these families all have other things as well. You know, the siblings are involved in baseball and hockey and skating and just school nights and stuff. So sometimes the participation is not what we would hope, frankly, and we're trying to figure out how can we get more people together, because that is truly one of their kind of foundational elements is, hey, we're trying to build this community where everybody is supporting each other and is there for each other. Just kind of a logistical nightmare of trying to get 25 families to agree on a Tuesday night out or a Friday night out or a Saturday afternoon thing when they've got their own lives going on. And so the answer is, it really, really varies. We've had events where we've had probably 10 to 15 families come together. And then we've had some nights where we tried things and, you know, three or four are there. What's great is that now with the office, they just say, hey, we're swinging by on Tuesday night and somebody from the organization will be there to let them in and let them use the facility and hang out.
Well, I know, you know, we want our audience to definitely, you know, check out the DC Strong, you know, website. You can find that at www.dcstrong.org. And then check out the /never-forgotten and you will see a picture of sweet Kevin in his Super Kevin shirt with a little bit of his story, which is super cool that that's on the website. And, you know, if we have listeners out there who think this is super awesome, which of course everybody will, because I'm about jumping out of my seat thinking, I think what I love is that, as you've said, right, with so many organizations that, you know, I think between just we three families with three, you know, my son had Ewing's, Lucy has ALL with neuroblastoma, right? The amount of organizations that probably just the three of us have been connected with is huge. And yet the what happens when you're done with treatment, what happens when you unfortunately lose a child, to have that kind of continuation, because you're so, you know, you've been in that cancer life for so long, that re-engaging with kind of the general population just is something that I think is hard to describe unless you've been there. And to be able to maintain that bridge just is, I don't know, fills me with a lot of joy. And so if people want to donate, where can we send them?
So you can just go right to their webpage, again, dcstrong.org. There is a tab on there for donations. There's also some merchandise. You can buy a couple of sweet shirts and, you know, the proceeds go to the organization, obviously. There are, you know, different items, coffee cups, there are socks, there are hats, there's all kinds of different memorabilia or swag on there, I guess if you want to call it that. There are one of the truly, truly just incredible moments for the organization was Dustin was a huge fan of the band called Shinedown, a little rock and roll band, and got to see them a couple times in concert. And then just somehow got a backstage pass, was able to meet the band. They kind of took him under his wing and our organization under his wing. And they've now done multiple fundraisers for us. They actually did a care package with a little girl where they went to FAO Schwartz in New York before the store was open. And she got to go on a shopping spree with members of the band and went to sound check of an acoustic show. Then got to watch this show from backstage. I mean, so yeah, so they've made a couple of different shirts and some hoodies and stuff like that. Last, obviously, COVID has been a nightmare and they canceled, obviously, their tour as much as everybody else's tour. And they had some surprises planned for that. So they released an acoustic version of one of their top songs called Unity.
That was Dustin's favorite.
It was Dustin's favorite song. And they sold that and just as a donation to DC Strong. And so gave us the proceeds from that, which was fantastic.
Can you still download it?
No. So it was a limited release, unfortunately, and it's gone now. I just want to clear something up that touched on earlier. I would love this to be my job. Like I would love care packages and being part of this to be a job, but it's just, we are absolutely not there yet. We do have one full-time employee, which is Larry, which is our president. And then the rest of us are just volunteers.
You know, I think that also, I mean, Dustin sounds like just such an amazing guy who started so much and had a vision at such a young age. And unfortunately, we recently lost Dustin, correct?
It's been almost 2 years now.
During that world tour, he was not feeling great, and he pushed himself to be there for those kids. And it was amazing to watch him. Mark would explain to me that he would just light up at being able to be around these other kids and see them happy. And
It was incredible. You know, we were, like I said, there were six smelly guys in a van, and you know, he would sleep for a decent amount of the drives in between states, just because he was in so much pain and just grinding and severely hurting. And, but then we would get to wherever we were going, we'd rest up for a little bit, and then we'd go meet a family, and the absolute switch would come on, and he would just be happy and energetic and able to connect with these kids on a deeply personal level. And then as soon as we were done, he would essentially like collapse back into the van and just be in pain again. And obviously he was able to enjoy a lot of the trip, the majority of the trip, but there were parts that were unpleasant. And I know Larry, our president, was his roommate. And so they shared a room, and there were nights where Dustin was absolutely struggling through, but yet would not complain about it, would not say, hey, no, we need to cancel this, or we're not doing this. He would push us on. Okay, where's the next one? Where's the next one? So just kind of the spirit that he had. He was diagnosed, I think, when he was 6 years old, and was actually read his last rites multiple times and would fight through it. And just unfortunately, it was one of those things where the last time that it came back, it just couldn't be stopped. And we lost him, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think he had Wilms tumor.
Correct.
It's a long journey, but what a legacy.
And for all of our listeners too, as well, on this podcast, we will share all of the information about DC Strong on our website and include any links and information that would be needed in our show notes as well. So one of the other things, I guess, that was really amazing when I first met Mark was hearing his story and how you started riding your bicycle to help children who are fighting cancer. And I just remember sitting, you know, I think we were in a Panera Bread restaurant.
That's right.
And you were just telling us this amazing story of how you rode Route 66 and how Kevin, he absolutely loved cars, correct? And so that's kind of what started all of your rides that you are continuing to do today. Is that correct?
Yeah. So essentially, he loved a bunch of things, right? In cars, the animated movie Cars was one of those. We can probably still to this day recite 95% of that movie. And that movie is based loosely off of Route 66, kind of, you know, the old road, and then, you know, with the town and everything, and then the new highway went through, and then the town kind of died off. And so we had talked as a family for a couple of years about driving Route 66, just all together road tripping it. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to get enough time off of work. And Kevin was, you know, he was always in treatment or very close to treatment. We couldn't get enough time away to make it work. You know, we could have driven through in 2 or 3 days, but that's, you know, not fun, right? We want to spend some time and enjoy it. And so, unfortunately, after he passed, we were faced with, what do we do now? And one of Kelly's uncles also was a mechanic for years and years and talked about driving Route 66 as well. And just to back up just ever so slightly, so one of Kevin's favorite activities as well was to ride his bicycle up and down our driveway, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And so when we were on our Make-A-Wish trip, so we were able to take a Make-A-Wish trip. We went to Mickey's house in Disney World for his 4th birthday. And when we came back, I thought, how can I pay this organization back? I mean, we were treated first class the entire way, the whole nine yards. And so I found this bike ride in Michigan, where it's a 3-day, 300-mile bike ride that raises money for Make-A-Wish. And so I thought, well, there's no way that any human could do 300 miles in 3 days. And so I started riding a bike. I don't know, I was not a cyclist. I mean, I rode a bike as a kid, but I'd kind of, like everybody, just kind of forgotten about it as I got to be an adult. And so eventually I bought a bike and started training for this ride. And the first 2 years were fantastic. Kevin was there at the finish line. It was incredibly emotional. And then obviously he passes and I still start to ride, and the ride becomes even more emotional because I'm thinking of, you know, all the memories, et cetera. So flash forward to the Route 66, and Kelly says, hey, we're going to ride Route 66. It would be
initially, we're just going to drive Route 66.
Right. And then she says, well, it would be kind of fun if we could ride our bikes through a portion of every state as we make our way from Chicago to Los Angeles. And I said, well, if we're going to ride our bikes in a portion of every state, why don't we just ride the whole thing on our bikes? And she says,
I'm out.
Yeah. She says, you're crazy. And I said, absolutely. And so I decided to make the incredibly brilliant financial decision of quitting my job and trying to ride my bike on Route 66. And so we did. We drove over to Chicago. It starts right at the Art Museum in downtown Chicago. I got on my bike. And so Kelly and her mom is a fifth wheel trailer. So she was like our support vehicle. And I would just ride my bike and then obviously camp with them at night. And started riding my bike in downtown Chicago. Made it about 3 miles. Quickly realized I was going to get hit by a bus or a truck or a taxi or an Uber. And so kind of called an audible and kind of rerouted. And started riding by Lake Michigan and eventually just said, this is just insane. So we actually drove out to Joliet and then started the next day. And so, yeah, we rode my bike. So we decided to see if we could do it as a fundraiser. So we did it as a fundraiser for Cure Search and DC Strong and just kind of did a media blitz, you know, started doing some TV interviews, some radio interviews, sending out emails and Facebook and all that kind of stuff, Instagram. And then kind of word of mouth kind of kept spreading and I kept riding my bike. And then we had some mechanical issues. The hitch on the fifth wheel camper broke on day two, which was not awesome. And so we were in Braidwood, Illinois over the weekend. So of course nothing was open. So we lost a couple days there. So I just kind of rode my bike in circles a little bit there. And then eventually, once we knew that the parts were coming, my mother-in-law said, well, just go, keep going, and we'll catch up with you. So I rode 2 days kind of by myself and then stayed in hotels at night. And then eventually they caught up with me. And there were parts where Route 66 disappears and it turns into I-40 out west. And that was not super awesome to try to ride a bicycle on the freeway, which was hazardous.
Yeah. And this is in, you know, mid to early July, actually right now.
Yeah.
You know, in the deserts of Arizona and California. Yeah. So there were times where there were no places for him to stop and get, you know, more water or anything. So
right.
He actually didn't ride portions of it.
Yeah. So I didn't end up riding the entire route. I end up, we drove the whole thing, but I end up riding just under 1,700 miles out of the 2,300.
Oh my gosh.
But we also raised, you know, $10,000.
Oh, yay.
That's incredible.
That's incredible, you guys.
And so you continued to do this ride every year, correct?
So not the Route 66, although I'd love to ride it again, but the Make-A-Wish ride, yes.
And that is coming up, right?
That's next weekend, yes.
Well, we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And safe travels and hydration and social distancing and all about riding during a pandemic.
Right. So yeah, typically there are about 900 riders who do the 300 mile ride and then another 400 or 500 riders who do the 1 day 50 mile ride. And this year, obviously with COVID, they've announced that it's just going to be 100% virtual. And so they've just said, hey, ride however much you want, wherever you want. And typically I have, 10 to 15, sometimes 30 people who I know that ride it with me at varying speeds. And so this year we were still talking about, maybe we can still do a small group ride somewhere. But with COVID, I think it just looks like it's not necessarily the safest. And so I just told them, hey, look, I'm just going to ride solo. You guys can ride however you want. And we'll all ride hopefully on the same 3 days, next Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but we'll all kind of be spread out all over the state, unfortunately.
Well, a ride is a ride. My husband's a cyclist, so any reason to get out there is a good reason, and this is one of the best. We've all, three of us, obviously have been super blessed by Make-A-Wish's generosity and what they do for kids and families. And so we'll also put a link to, if you can, you know, let people know where they can go to donate. And this helps out Make-A-Wish of Michigan or all of Make-A-Wish?
It does. So this one is strictly for Make-A-Wish Michigan. The ride itself, in my understanding, is that it's funding Make-A-Wish Michigan. Correct.
Wonderful. Well, by the time this airs, you will have been done with your ride, but it's never too late to donate. So do you want to give a shout out to that page or do you want us to send the link?
Yeah, it's just wishamile.org So WASHAMILE.org. And then if you just do a search for Mark Linder, LINDER, it'll take you to my kind of subset page, and or Kelly Linder, KELLY Linder, LINDER.
I do the 1 day 50 mile.
All that's right. Awesome. Good for you. That's great.
I've only done it twice, but it's good.
Really good. Well, guys, we're coming to the end of our segment. We so appreciate you guys being here and taking us along on your journey, and can't wait to keep following you guys. But as you are our first guest, we're going to end with our very first ever random question.
All right.
All right. You ready for it?
Let's do it.
What's the funniest joke you know by heart?
Oh, that's easy. And this is one of Kevin's specialties, was telling jokes that he didn't really know the punchlines to, or he would get the punchlines confused. But this one in particular, he knows 100% by heart. Why don't you ever see elephants hiding in trees? Because they're really good at it.
Oh, I love it. Macaroni and cheese, spoon or fork?
I use a spoon.
Man, I hadn't thought about it. I guess if given the choice, I'm typically a spoon over a fork guy.
Yeah, you got to get all that creaminess.
I'm right there with you. We are a house divided, and this is a big topic of conversation. So ask your girls. Ty, macaroni and cheese, spoon or fork?
Spoon.
Oh, we're all kindred spirits. I love it. I love that joke, you guys. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. And we'll keep posted on the journey.
And can we ask you one random question as well? Are we allowed to do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Please do.
Okay. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
No.
It's a meat with two buns. I don't know. I'm going, it's a sandwich. Ty?
I'm saying no. I don't think of a hot dog as a sandwich. I think of a sandwich as ham or turkey or...
Yeah, but what's the definition of sandwich? Something between two buns. Or two pieces of bread.
What do you guys think?
I say no. You don't say, I'm going to go get a sandwich and you ever come back with a hot dog, right? Like,
no, but what is it? Is it just a class of its own?
I think it is. I think, it's kind of the same as with a hamburger, right?
I don't know.
But yeah, hamburger, when it comes, it is only one piece of bread, technically. Split in two, but not split all the way.
All right, we need audience feedback, you guys. Make some comments. Let us know. Let's hear your arguments. Let us know. This is great, you guys. Thanks for that random question. We really appreciate it. And we'll keep following you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good day.
Thank you for listening. And we look forward to you joining us next time on the Golden Voices podcast. Make sure to check out our website, bridgesofgold.com/podcast, for show notes and other show-related information.